This is Nathan Lee. I'm talking today with A.O. Scott from The New York Times and Melissa Anderson from Time Out about the year in movies. Want to say hello, someone?
Oh, hello. I'm Melissa Anderson, film editor of Time Out New York Magazine.
I'm A.O. Scott, film critic at The New York Times. Very nice to be here, Nathan.
Thanks for coming, guys. So, sure. 2007 was a year of really big, oversized, kind of ambitious, epic films, a lot of American films, things like There Will Be Blood, Inland Empire, I'm Not There. 2008 seems a much smaller year. The scale has come down, whether it's sort of indie films like Wendy and Lucy or Ballast or foreign films like Before I Forget. Things seem smaller. And at the same time, this has been a huge sort of year of social change and sort of cultural change. What do you guys think about kind of the scale and the sort of general feeling of movies this year?
Well, it's interesting. Three of my favorite films this year are Wendy and Lucy, which you mentioned, which is very micro. Mama's Man, perhaps even more micro because it takes place almost entirely in one loft.
It's the sine qua non of micro.
Yes. And Che, which is certainly epic in length.
But micro in almost
In its tone and I think in its focus, because this really isn't a biopic. This is looking at two very distinct chapters of Guevara's life with some emphasis placed on his trip to New York City in 1964. You know, it's interesting. I've been poring over these lists and many people have been saying this has been such a crummy year in cinema. But then when I look at films that I've really loved, they have been really astounding films. I think there's something about their smallness that has made them so special. I mean, I think a film like La France is in many ways just as exciting or as innovative as, say, something like last year's I'm Not There.
Well, I think that there's maybe, I don't know, you know, you never really know why. It's a little too easy or too facile, you know, to peg things to supposed shifts in the zeitgeist. But there does seem to me to have been a bit of a rediscovery of the human scale of filming, so that you have stories that are extremely attentive to individuals, to, you know, visually to their faces and bodies, and also narratively and thematically just to the what they're doing and how they're going about doing it. I mean, think of a movie like Happy Go Lucky, one that I like very much, which is really just, you know, a character study and has somehow takes what is a very small drama. You know, the big emotional climax of that movie is a driving instructor, you know, throwing a tantrum in a car. I mean, there's not, you know, there aren't big life and death, good and evil stakes there, just as there aren't necessarily in Wendy and Lucy or even in Rachel Getting Married. But there's a sense in which these small dramas carry a lot of thematic weight and a lot of news and kind of, I think when I watch these movies, sort of orient us about, you know, where we are in the world and what it is that we're trying to figure out. And I'm encouraged by that development, because I felt like this was also a year where a lot of the heavy epic and allegorical baggage that has come to dominate so much, you know, mid-level independent and big Hollywood filmmaking in this country started to really wear out for me. I would say Dark Knight was the big sign, yeah, of just the tiredness of that, you know, big Manichean, however you say that word, you know, good and evil, heavy post 9/11
Sturm und Drang. Yeah, well, let's talk about The Dark Knight. I mean, that's kind of the big elephant in the you know, the room this year. I mean, this was a gigantic blockbuster. They're re-releasing it. It's going to make even more money. But I think the fascinating thing was the critical response to the film and the level of violent reaction pro and con to this film. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, if you were to criticize this film, you know, on a blog, somewhere online, the hate mail that came pouring in was astonishing. I mean, what do you guys think? Why did this film evoke such an extreme reaction to people? I mean, it seems to me like somehow this movie represented something people were waiting for. It was like, this is the great, brooding, philosophically serious, profound comic book blockbuster, you know, we've all been waiting for. I don't think any of us felt it was actually that film, but what's the extreme reaction to this movie about?
I think it did. I think a lot of things were, I mean, it you know, in the last 7 or 8 years, superhero comic book movies have been getting bigger and bigger, and in a way, more and more ambitious, or at least, you know, are taking themselves more and more seriously. So I think that this was a kind of a climax of that, where you have the sort of the pop, pulp, geek elements of comic book culture converging with the self-important ambitions of serious Hollywood filmmaking, converging with the huge corporate interests of the Warner Brothers machine. And, you know, also...
And yet the ideas in the film aren't that interesting.
No, they're not that interesting, nor are they that coherent.
The plot is often nonsensical, right?
Yeah, and the ideas are not coherent, but it seems like it's about something. And that's sort of the key to it, because you can decode it allegorically any way you want. So there were conservative commentators who were like, well, this was an apologia for the Bush administration, and you know, Bruce Wayne is really the terribly misunderstood heroic George Bush. Or you could say, no, this is about Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib and torture, and about the ethical dilemmas of the war on terror, or anything you want. Anything you want. I mean, that's the fun of allegory, yeah. but it was, I think, if you could say this, systematically incoherent in not actually risking being about anything particularly at all.
Well, and how much did the fact that this was Heath Ledger's last film, I think that certainly played into the hype that was leading to this film. And I mean, he gives a great performance. But then there's been all the speculation about, this is just a harbinger of what could have happened were he still alive. And I think even that rhetoric or that discourse became rather ridiculous, ridiculousness.
Yeah, it added to the whole sort of ghoulish portentousness aura of that movie. It's a very sort of ghoulish film in a lot of ways.
Well, and I mean, in a way, it also connects the movie in a kind of, morbid real world way to what is, seems to be one of the big themes of an awful lot of the Oscar time movies, which is martyrdom. I mean, it is really, I don't want to spoil the endings of any movies, but we have...
Milk gets shot at the end.
Milk, Che, 7 Pounds, The Wrestler. I mean, there's an awful lot of sort of, quasi-Christ-like figures sacrificing themselves on screen.
The one story that sort of I think dominated all of our consciousness this year had nothing to do with movies, was the election. Were there ways in which the movies at all spoke to either of you about the election, or was there a sort of gulf between the two, a disconnect?
I found it very hard to get any work done. Because I would sit at my computer and trying to review whatever movies were coming out this week and going, to 538.com every 10 minutes to see what the new state polls were from Indiana or North Carolina or wherever. And there was a way that it was the most, apart from one's own stake in the outcome, it was just the most interesting drama going on.
Yeah. And don't you think in a way that the release of Milk and the fact that the election, ended, everyone sort of, got back to their lives, and then Prop 8 hit and Milk hit, and suddenly that became the political, the kind of firebrand, film of the year.
Well, it's interesting. The first time I saw Milk was at a press screening that was a Thursday morning, 2 days after the election. And I believe at that time, whether or not Prop 8 had passed was still in dispute. It was incredibly powerful seeing this film. And of course, there are many overlaps between Milk's career and Obama's career, and especially toward the end when Milk says, "You got to give him hope." Everyone in that packed screening room started weeping. But also at the same time, I was very anxious, not knowing whether or not Prop 8 had passed and what that would mean. And then I got back to my office, checked the news, they had tallied that Proposition 8 had passed, which then led to that whole discussion about if this film had been released a month earlier, would this have been able to change the course of history?
Do you think it would have?
No.
I mean, I'm always skeptical of claims. I remember when Fahrenheit 9/11 was going to defeat George Bush. But Milk, I think it's interesting what you say about Milk, because it did seem the some of the resonances seemed, seeing it after the election, really, really uncannily fortuitous, just, you know, because it's a movie about a community organizer. It's about, you know, his whole notion of uses, you know, sort of building a coalition where particular group interests turn into a kind of, you know, take on a universal resonance. It was very, very interesting in that way. The other movie, I think you guys are both going to kill me, but the other movie that struck me when I saw it as a premonition of the Obama age.
Here it comes.
You know it's coming. was Rachel Getting Married?
Which to me is the Dark Knight of the art house. This is the movie. It's the violent reaction.
It's the Dark Knight of the soul.
No, but I'm going to back off this.
No, don't back off.
But I want to hear. No, but go ahead and say.
Well, I actually have mixed feelings about the movie. I'm extremely fond of it without entirely buying it. That is, I find the addiction and recovery story is sort of a weak point and strikes me as somewhat banal. But the setting and, you know, if you want the sort of the demographics of the movie, I found very, very interesting. I mean, because it did seem to me to be, it was a vision of how people live in the United States. Granted, you know, people of certain
upper
class and
class
ideology. Maybe. But whatever. I'm not ashamed. but it, in a way that I guess it much, let's say, in the way that the Obama campaign did on a smaller and more partial and you know, perhaps less visionary scale, it sort of showed a view of American life that we all know is there, that we see and that we know exists and that we almost never see on film.
It reflected something
that was real and to me in movies was new. And that, you know, movies in other countries, I think French movies have actually been, you know, a lot better, say, at representing the reality, the demographic reality of what, say, even the French middle class looks like now. And American movies haven't. So that you had a movie that was, you know, multicultural and multiracial without really making that an overt theme or a problem in the movie.
I mean, you have a point. I didn't care for the movie, but, you know, when you get a sort of explicit depiction of, you know, America, the way we live now in movies, you either get this kind of like sarcastic, suburban, you know, Alan Ball kind of take on right. you know, American culture, or this quirky, you know, small town or like indie hipster sort of. You don't, you know, there is something, I suppose, new, you know, fresher in that representation. I just didn't buy it for a second.
Yeah, no, it's interesting, Tony, because where you see this as being a nice representation of a certain demographic, to me, I saw it as just constantly burrowing inward. Whereas a film like something as micro as we mentioned earlier, Mama's Man, which you would think
burrowing inward to what?
Burrowing inward into the most toxic form of narcissism. Yes, as you said,
which is the movie's subject. I mean, be fair. You know, I mean,
it is the movie's subject, but I don't ever really see any kind of critique of it. I don't think people are really all that hard on Kim. And for me, my biggest problem is that it really typifies a kind of movie, an American film specifically, in which shrieking, hysteria, histrionics equals acting. I'm sorry, it does not. And I really think, and when you add the language, the discourse of 12-stepping and addiction and recovery, I think it's completely corrupting scripts in American independent cinema.
I don't disagree with that. I think that my intuition about this movie, not having actually read the script, is that the script was possibly the weakest thing about it. And I mean, what I really like about it is the setting and the population and the mise-en-scène and just the, like, I like the way the scenes, you know, run on, you know, for too long. There is a real feeling of the kind of chaotic rhythm of life in that movie that I quite like. And I think, you know, in a way, this is an interesting argument, although not a solvable problem. But it strikes me that the toxic narcissism is exactly the problem in the movie. It is exactly, you know, here you have this sort of, this attempt to build this, you know, lovely, stable, happy family world, and you have this you know thing that comes into it from outside, which is addiction,
but
or
and
that
how
sprouts
is it solved?
Within it.
Anne Hathaway
well,
crashes
how can it
her
be
car.
Solved? How can
she crashes her car, then her older sister gives her a bath, and then it all works out.
And then
at
she
the
goes
end.
Back to rehab, and well, she'll relapse again.
I think we could probably argue about this movie until Rachel got divorced. So.